that leadership is key, and that some leaders inspire and some leaders manipulate, and that the successful organizations have leadership that can inspire. I want you to think about that for a minute. A lot of organizations, corporations, they deal with what. But this book talks about we need to start with why. So that's something that that I want to look at. And because as a congregation, we know what we do, right? But do we know why we do it? And once you know why you're doing what you do, then another big thing is why will tell you, you know, how you need to do those things. So I'm going to start with the what things first. We know that as a congregation of people, and if you have a new Christian, and you tell and you ask, why are we here? And they might respond by saying, well, as a Christian, I'm to live a sin-free life. As a Christian, I can learn from the Bible that I need to assemble with other Christians. I need to take the Lord's Supper. I need to give an offering. I need to be involved in teaching and preaching. And I need to be involved in singing. Okay, that's what we do as Christians. But then the question is, why do we do those what things? What's our purpose? Is our purpose just to do these things, and why do we do them? We do them, we might say we do them, well, we're commanded to do them by a command, by an example, or a necessary inference. And that's true, but that really is a partial answer. We need to really understand the why we do things. And so I want to look at some scriptures this morning. And the first one we'll find in Matthew 13. And this is Matthew's account of the parable of the sower and the seed. Matthew 13:23, and actually we'll start back in 37 with the explanation. He answered and said, he that sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed, these are the sons of the kingdom. And the tares are the sons of the evil one. I'm in the wrong place. Sorry. Matthew 13, verse 23. He that was sown upon the good ground, this is he that hears the word and understands it, who brings forth fruit and brings some a hundredfold, sixtyfold, and thirtyfold. So in this parable, you have the seed that's planted on different types of ground, right? And some of it doesn't produce at all. But we see one of the things that Christians need to do is to be productive. And here in Matthew 13, we see that we need to be productive a hundredfold, sixtyfold, thirtyfold. And so that may help explain why we're doing these things. We'll get more about that later. But as Christians, we need in some way to be productive. In Matthew 5:16, Jesus says, even so, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your God who is in heaven. So one of the things that we're also to do is to let our light shine. Okay? And so we let our light shine, and our light are our good works that people can see so that God can be glorified. There's two things in that. Good works, and so that God is glorified. So as we start looking at our purpose, these are why we do these things over here. And we'll have more to say about that. In Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 10, we see something similar. For we are His workmanship, God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God afore prepared that we should walk in them. So we are supposed to be a people characterized by good works. And according to our ability, those good works, when we look at this, could be 100-fold, 60-fold, or 30-fold. And God only requires of us what we're able to do. When we think about the parable of talents, 5-talent man, 2-talent man, 1-talent man. He didn't put on people more than what they could do. In 1 Peter 2:9, who are we? You are an elect race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, that you may show forth the excellencies of Him who called you out of darkness into the marvelous light. I didn't write down Ephesians 2, but here's 1 Peter, and we are showing the excellencies. There's a spelling problem there. That's all right. The next verse I want us to look at is Ephesians 3, chapter 10. Keep in mind, we're productive. We're the seed planted in good soil. We are a light that shines in a dark world. Our light are our good works. It is for the purpose that God is glorified. In Ephesians 2, God created us for good works. And in 1 Peter, we are showing excellencies. So then the thing that you should be thinking is, who are we showing these excellencies to? In Ephesians chapter 3, verse 10, verse 9, to make all men see what is the dispensation of the mystery which for ages hath been hid in God who created all things, to the intent that now unto the principalities and the powers in the heavenly places might be made known through the church the manifold wisdom of God. The wisdom of God is made manifest by what organization? It's okay for you to say it. It's the church. Who is it being made known to? Who is the manifold wisdom of God being made known to in this verse? Principalities and powers in heavenly places. So we get two things here. We are showing our works to the rest of humanity for a particular purpose, mind you. That people will be drawn to the light, that people can be saved, and we are also, through our good works, through the church, illustrating to heavenly creatures God's wisdom. And that could be, who are the heavenly creatures? You know, God and His angels, and Satan and his angels, okay? So we're getting to the purpose of why we're Christians and why we don't lead sinful lives, why we assemble, why we take the Lord's Supper, why we give an offering, why we engage in teaching and preaching, and why there's a spelling problem here too, and why we're involved in singing. So then, if we can understand this, that we are created and we become Christians to do good works, to show the excellencies of God, and we're showing those good works to other people for the purpose of bringing other people to Christ and to heavenly beings to illustrate God's wisdom, then we get to the how we do these things. Okay? And we already see something about the how. We see that it's through the church. Okay, so the how involves the church. Now in Ephesians chapter 4, we see that God gave the church different types of people. In verse 11, apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachings. They have a purpose, which is to prepare people For the work of service and being fruitful is the work of service as we serve the world in according to whatever ability that we have. We may be a young mother with young children at home. We may be out in the workplace. But in some way, we are showing God working in our lives according to our abilities. And so, in Ephesians chapter 4, we see that God gave gifts to the church and like elders, and because we are supposed to grow into the stature of Jesus Christ. I haven't read all those verses, but if you're familiar with the Bible, you are familiar with those verses. And if you're familiar with my teaching, it seems to me like I say that ad nauseum, you know, all the time. So we're supposed to grow into the stature of Jesus Christ. Because if we're paying attention to this, if we're actively growing into the stature of Jesus Christ, then we will be fruitful. Our light will shine. God's works through us will be demonstrated to humanity and also to heavenly beings. So we're supposed to grow into the stature of Jesus Christ, but there's also another figure in the book of Ephesians that we're supposed to grow into. Ephesians chapter 6. We're supposed to grow into a soldier. Okay? Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12. Our wrestling is not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, against the powers, against the world rulers of this darkness, against the spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Wherefore, take up the whole armor of God. And you know the rest of those verses, right? 14. Stand, therefore, having girded your loins with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace, etc., etc., etc. So we're supposed to grow into the stature of Jesus Christ. We are also supposed to grow into a soldier. And we're supposed to be soldiers in an army. Right? And so the church is an army of soldiers. Also, a church is a collective of people who are images of Jesus Christ, but we're also a collective of soldiers in an army. And so when we talk then about the why, and we need to be productive, our light needs to shine, we need to demonstrate through our good works and glorify God to humanity and to the rest of the world, how we do that is by growing into Jesus Christ and becoming a complete soldier. All right. Let's talk about these what things. All of a sudden, knowing why we're doing things and how we do things tells us why we have to be sin-free. Because we have to be a true soldier of Jesus Christ. And a powerful soldier in Jesus Christ has the attribute, has the qualities of being sin-free. If we're going to be Jesus Christ, and we can't be productive unless we are, we have to be sin-free. So it's not just the Bible, not just a book of do's and don'ts, because we've got to follow some formula for being a Christian and some formula for running a church. We have to understand why we do what we do and how we do it. And so then when we think about assemblies, and sometimes then in churches, the leadership tries to manipulate their members to attend all the time, right? Is that true? I think it is. And one of the manipulations I see, and you may like this, you may not like it, but is like some churches you see have big membership boards where if you're there, you turn your deal. And so what's the motivation? Well, I got to get to church. I got to, you know, turn my deal to show that I was there. Versus, I need to be at church because I need to grow into the stature of Jesus Christ. I need to be a complete soldier so that I can be fruitful and productive and demonstrate to the world the glory, and to heavenly beings, the glory of God, right? And so, Sometimes it's hard to assemble, and generally we have a 40% reduction in our services from Sunday morning to Sunday night. Wednesday night services are about the same. And so sometimes we don't make the effort to assemble. But if we understand this, the why and the how, if I'm going to be a complete soldier of Christ, if I'm going to grow into the stature of Jesus Christ, and the methodology for it is the church that Jesus died for, then I want to assemble so that I can be that good soldier, right? But there's another thing. If I'm going to be in an army of soldiers, do I not only care about how strong I am as a soldier? I should also be concerned about how strong Stanley is, and how strong Kathy is, and how strong Walker is, and Jeff, and Karen. And so my concern as a Christian is not for myself, because after all, that is selfishness, right? But it should be, I should be characterized by humility so that I can help prepare other soldiers so that we can have a stronger army so that we can be more productive with good works, so we can dimage, so we can be, illuminate the whole world, and God can be glorified not only on earth but in heaven. Okay? So all of a sudden, that, to me, that doesn't make assemblies that hard. I love, by the way, I love coming to church. The Lord's Supper. Yeah, there's this vertical thing between us and God, but when you read about the Lord's Supper, it is a remembrance of Jesus Christ. To be a good soldier, to grow into the stature of Jesus Christ, we need to remember him. So this was instituted to be done on a weekly basis so that people would not forget Jesus Christ, but they would remember him. And as we remember him, remember from the other scriptures, that it's a part of that is thinking about ourselves. Thinking, am I living the right kind of life so that I can participate in this spiritual feast in the right way, right? So there are definitely horizontal things here as we assembly. Offering, as we give of our means, that's a sacrifice. And we're supposed to live sacrificial lives. And so that is a sacrifice. And so sometimes it's not a sacrifice if we're just giving out of our excess. And, of course, being involved in teaching and preaching helps us to go into, and by the way, the sacrificial nature of offering, Jesus Christ creates a sacrifice, soldier sacrifice, being involved in teaching and preaching so that we can grow in knowledge and understanding, singing, we sing to God, but yes, in Ephesians 5:19, we sing to each other, right? And so it is also an activity, in my opinion, that is sort of a team-building activity. So, we do these things. I mean, the why, when we look at a successful organization and why they're successful, if we're just involved in just this side of it, I'm a Christian, this is what I do, it's what I see everybody else doing, and don't really understand the why part of it and how that's accomplished, then we're not really doing and being the kind of army that we need to be. So we gotta understand all this. I want to wrap this up by, I've been doing a lot of thinking about my life and why I am where I am, and the blessings that God has granted me. And one of the things that he has blessed me, and if you're visiting, you may not know this, but I'm a veterinarian. And I've not really thought about this before, but in thinking about this, I came to realize this, that our veterinary clinic, Tejas Veterinary Clinic, is either the number one or the number two most profitable clinics in Corpus Christi. Now, there are some corporate-owned veterinary clinics, and I think some of them are probably doing better. But of privately-owned clinics, I think we're either number one or number two. So we're definitely in the top two. And so you might say then because of that it's a successful organization. Then the question is, well, why is it? Are we in a good location? A lot of businesses do well if they're in a good location. Well, there's another veterinary clinic right down the road from us. We're not located on the busiest road, although FM 624 gets a lot of traffic, but we're really on the outskirts of town. So I don't think it's location why we've been successful. And I don't think it's because that our prices are cheap. Because within a 10-mile radius, I think there's one, two, three. There's three other veterinary clinics. We're more expensive than all of them. Significantly more expensive. So people don't come to us because they're looking to save money. And it's not because we're like selling Big Macs at McDonald's. We just sell a lot of them. I think that the reason that we're successful is because our employees and our clientele have bought into what we're selling as far as, you know, as far as what we're about. Most businesses have a mission statement. We have one. I think we probably borrowed pretty heavily from some other people to come up with that mission statement. But the thing is that it has to be real. And this has to be real, by the way, for us also. We can't just academically look at this and say, okay, I've got to be fruitful. We can't just academically say that I believe in heaven and I believe in hell. Those things have to be real to us. And I think it's become real at our veterinary clinic. We employ some relief veterinarians. And each relief veterinarian that we've ever hired, we just had one from San Antonio. That's all she does is a relief work. Everybody has always said this. She goes, you know, I am really impressed by your staff. They're real knowledgeable. There's a great deal of organization. And so they want to come and work for us. I've got some veterinarians in San Antonio that said, anytime you need somebody, you call me. Because they enjoy working at our clinic. Part of that is Dr. Hebert and I. You know, because we're happy guys. And we have fun. And our staff is a lot like family to us. But so I get that from relief veterinarians. And one thing that we tell our staff is that they are our most valuable asset to our business. They know they're appreciated. And that's the truth. They are our most valuable asset. And by the way, in the church, who's the most valuable asset in the church? The members. Each and every one of you are the most valuable asset to this congregation. The stronger that we individually become as Christians, the stronger this church becomes. That's undeniable. And when we think, sometimes we think of a chain and a weak link, that's not the church. The church is like a mesh of links. So you don't lose a chain when the weak link goes, but it's a interlinked. You may have some weak links, so to speak, in a church just because by virtue of the fact they haven't had time to grow and mature and become the strong people of faith, but they're linked with other strong Christians. I'd really have a superb office manager. She didn't start off that way. She wasn't trained that way, but she'd become superb. And so she teaches our employees once a week. And so our employees work on their individual skills. That's another huge difference between us and other veterinary clinics. All legally I have to do is examine, diagnose, and prescribe. I can let my staff do everything else. And so they feel a lot of freedom to do things. Our office manager also involves our staff in activities to build the team. So she'll hire people and work on their skills. But after 90 days, if she doesn't think they fit in, they tell them, you're not going to fit in here. She tells them, you're not going to fit in here. You probably need to go somewhere else. And so everything's not applicable to churches. It's not like we're going to cut anybody loose here. So I see this, that our staff buys in to what we're about. And there's another example that I want to use that I think is directly relevant to churches. One of the big issues in veterinary medicine are these public-assisted spay-neuter clinics. And a lot of veterinarians are very incensed and very angry about it, and rightfully so. We pay taxes, they don't. Our taxes go to help fund what they're doing. They're supposed to find out if the people have low incomes. They don't. They're not responsible. So anybody can really go to these places. They go beyond their original mandates of spaying and neutering and are doing all kinds of things. So a lot of veterinarians are very incensed at these organizations because they're illegal. In different parts of the country, veterinary associations have got the legislature, and I think it's in Alabama, to bring these things under control. But it was a big failure, because what may be true legally is not the case when you have public opinion against your side. And the public wants animals to be spayed and neutered, even though they throw in all this other stuff into it. So what I begin to notice is a lot of times some of the most successful veterinarians, privately owned veterinary clinics, are the most incensed over these organizations, so angry at them. We're a little bit different. And this is why I think our employees buy into us. We are doing work for those organizations. For PAC, the cattery, they can bring those animals in. We will spay and neuter them. A lot of veterinarians don't do it. One of my associates doesn't because she makes 25% of what she grosses. And she goes, hey, I don't want to do these things, you know, because I'm not making very much money. I said, I tell her, we're running a business here. We're trying to interact with the community. And so what has happened with our business, because we have a mission statement that we're going to be involved in the health and the care of the animal population, even though these organizations are violating the law, and even though it's unfair, we're going to ignore that and become part of it. And what does that happen to our business? Well, we're either the number one or the number two grossing clinics in Corpus Christi. We didn't plan to be that, but we implemented a business plan, and we have a mission statement. And so my point is our employees and our clientele believe in us because we're true to our mission statement. Now, here's the application. Sometimes churches and leadership in churches don't want to help the poor and the needy in the community because why? Because it may be that some organization that we don't agree with is involved in it. We may say, I don't want to be involved in that because the Salvation Army is involved in that. I don't want to be involved in that because the Baptist Church is involved in that. And so we excuse ourselves from those activities because of a legitimate reason, but what happens is our message gets lost in that. And all of a sudden, from the outside looking in, it looks like we're uncaring, because we have a philosophical disagreement with some of these organizations who are also involved in this. If we're going to be a really strong church, we're going to have to learn to ignore some of that. And you remember what Jesus told Peter, by the way. Peter said, hey, there's other people preaching in your name, and they're not part of us. And Jesus said, you leave them alone. As long as my name is being glorified, you leave them alone. So we've really, I think, got to be involved doing good, doing works. And we may have a philosophical problem with some of these organizations. We're going to have to learn to quiet that down so that we can show to the world and to heavenly beings who we are and what we believe in. By the way, Parkway Church of Christ is not in the number one or number two churches in this community. And I have my office manager. She attends a church that we would typically say, oh, they're doing all these activities. They're doing all these things. That's why their membership is so big. That's not why she goes there. She goes there because of the preaching. She said at this church, Bay Area, what used to be called Bay Area, she said they teach practical lessons and they hold people accountable for their actions. And she goes, that's why I go there. She says she doesn't like the rock band. She doesn't like the other activities, but she does like the job that the preacher is doing. We're going to be the church that we need to be. We need to have the kind of leadership that we need to have. That's on me, and that's on Gus, and that's on David. Maybe we haven't been as inspirational. Maybe we haven't focused on the why. I'll take that. I'll accept that. But I want you to understand this, that we are a team of soldiers. We are a congregation. And if we're ever going to be the kind of people that we need to be, then we're going to have to understand why God wants us upon this earth. And to set everything aside that hinders us in that race. You know, it's Father's Day. I have these in my pocket right here. Because during the song service, I was crying a lot. I was thinking about my dad. He died when I was 62, when he was 62 years old. I'm 2 years away from that. I think about that every single day. Every day. And even though he's dead, I want to be a good son. I want to do the things that I need to do as an elder of this church to help all of you. Let me tell you, fathers, the family is an organization. The family is an institution. Make your children proud of you. Inspire them. Don't be so micromanagers that they lose sight of family structure and who you are and who you're supposed to be. And the best thing, one of the best things about being a father is being proud of your children. I'm proud of my children. My dad was proud of his children, too. And if you want to make your fathers and your mothers proud, then buy into this, that you need to be a light into the world. Whether you're a son, a daughter, a mother, a wife, or whoever you are, you need to buy into this and understand how we do that so that we can better do these what things, so we can be the people that we need to be. If you want to start that, that can start this morning. We have an invitation song, and it's called that for a reason. It's an invitation to become Jesus Christ. It's an invitation to glorify God through the work, through the good things that you do, and witness to the world and witness to heavenly beings the glory of God, the excellencies of God. We're all grateful for who we are, right? Wouldn't be possible without Jesus Christ. So if you want to start that journey, it begins with belief, repenting of a lifestyle, challenging yourself to live better, confessing Jesus Christ, being baptized, receiving the gift of the Holy Spirit, and starting on a brand new journey. You think about that. We're going to sing some verses of this song. If you want to, come right up here.